is Over the Garden Gate, a program brought to you by the University of California Cooperative Extension Master Gardener Program of Tuolumne County. The mission of the UCCE Master Gardeners is to provide research-based gardening information to the public. If you would like to contact our Master Gardener Program, please call our hotline, which is area code 209-533-5912. The hotline is not manned full-time, but we do pick up our messages and we will get back to you within the week.
Hello everybody, this is Debbie Powell, the Master Gardener Coordinator for both Calaveras and Tuolumne Counties. And I am at the UCCE office right here in downtown Sonora. And I have the great pleasure to talk to Scott Onetto. Scott, you are our county director of the four counties, but right now you're not acting as the county director. You're also the farm advisor, but right at this moment you're on sabbatical.
That is correct, Debbie. Thank you so much for having me.
Oh, it's wonderful to have you here. Now, as county director, when you do play that role, you're actually overseeing four counties, and that is El Dorado, Amador, Calaveras, and Tuolumne. So this must be somewhat nice to be on sabbatical and not have that particular responsibility.
Yes, yeah. So basically, this sabbatical is an opportunity for academics within the university system to relieve themselves of their day-to-day tasks and give them the opportunity to focus on particular projects. And so I've been taking this time to tie up a number of research projects that I've had going on for the last few years, particularly some weeds that we're starting to see more and more of in this area, so developing control strategies for those, and then also spending a lot of time writing some new university publications and revising some other publications that we already have on file. So it's been a great opportunity to sit and focus and not have the day-to-day interruptions that we normally have during our regular day jobs.
How often does this opportunity come around? Is this...
Yeah, so we get university credits to be able to take a sabbatical, and you basically earn a credit every year of work. And so most academics will often take a sabbatical, usually between, usually after 5 to 10 years, they usually start thinking about one. There's certainly academics that never take one and take that opportunity, but for the most part, usually advisors and other academics in the system will take one usually about every 10 years or so.
Well, it helps to fulfill your duties as a farm advisor or county director, because aren't you supposed to do part of that time doing research?
Yeah, so that's made one of our main goals as our position is to do research and extension or education to our clientele. And so, you know, to be able to do both of those, it takes, you know, time out of the office to be able to go and do field work and to be able to sit and synthesize that data, write up the results, publish it, and write peer-reviewed publications so that we can solve real-life problems.
So you're solving problems.
That's what we're
doing. So while you're doing that on sabbatical, it's not a vacation.
It is not. I think I'm actually maybe working more now than I do during the rest of my time. So, yeah.
But it's to achieve those things, like you said, and
correct,
to solve problems. So I understand that we have some problems looming in the future, and some of that is regarding weeds that are becoming more invasive, or are they the same varieties and they're just getting more aggressive? What's kind of going on there?
You know, so it's kind of an interesting paradigm that, you know, I can't necessarily say that we have more new weeds. I mean, weeds are always a threat. There's always new plants that are being brought in for all sorts of various reasons, right? They could either be brought in purposefully, like through the ornamental trade industry, and then ultimately those plants can naturalize and escape and become invasive weeds where they're competing with, you know, native plants or native ecosystems.
So they're just to follow you, they come through another venue. They actually come from overseas.
So the term invasive typically is referring to a non-native plant or non-native organism, in this case plants, that were brought here typically for some purpose. So typically the weeds that we deal with are ones that were either brought here as a contaminant, like yellow star thistle that was brought here in the 1850s as a seed contaminant in alfalfa. So early Europeans came over in the 1800s and they brought, you know, livestock and seed from their European nations. And in that, in those seeds was, of course, alfalfa, as well as many other exotics, and one of them being yellow star thistle. So they can be brought over as seed contaminants. Many of the ones we have were actually introduced through the ornamental trade industry. So, you know, plants being brought over as, you know, the new hot plant to put in your yard. Those plants, again, become used to and get acclimated to our wonderful climate.
Scotch broom?
Scotch broom is a great example.
I mean, Scotch broom is a beautiful plant.
Yeah.
And it's sold typically in so many retail stores, although the university has been trying to dampen that enthusiasm over Scotch broom because it just is terrible here.
It's extremely competitive. It has very few pests, and as we see in our communities, it can pose a significant fire hazard. So it basically, you know, takes over the understory of our conifer forests and many of our shrublands and oak woodlands, and can completely change that whole ecosystem.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah.
That's terrible.
Yeah.
So how about some of the other, star thistle, Scotch broom?
Yeah, so other ones that we're kind of on the lookout for. So, you know, many of the weeds that we, you know, are dealing with that are problematic, that you could say are weeds that have been here for, you know, 100, 150 years, mm-hmm. right? They've been here for a long time. Sometimes they take a while to kind of ramp up and become populations where, you know, we see them as a problem. But there are some new ones that are on the horizon that I think, you know, we as a community should be on the lookout for.
Okay.
One in particular I would say is a plant called stinkwort.
Oh,
yeah.
I've heard of
that. So it's pretty predominant now in throughout much of the Central Valley, and I would say over the last 5 years it's been moving up into many of the foothill communities along the roadways. It looks like little green pine trees, I guess you could say.
It's kind of feathery, isn't it?
The leaves are very small, narrow, almost like pine needles.
Okay.
And if you touch it, it's extremely glandular, sticky, and just really stinky, where it gets, of course, its common name.
Well, and also some people are very allergic
it does cause contact dermatitis in many individuals, so that's, you know, to be really careful with handling that plant if you're going to try to use hand removal or something like
but
that.
It's almost where you should wear, you know, full clothing, the same
definitely.
Way you would spray maybe pesticides.
Yeah, you would certainly want to wear protective equipment, so long sleeves, long pants, you know, clothes, shoes, gloves, and even maybe a mask or a respirator just to make sure you're fully protected.
Oh my gosh, that's incredible. Who wants that around?
No, yeah, and that plant's only been in California. It was first documented in the middle of the 1980s, so it's only been here, you know, 30
really?
Years. Yeah.
Where did it come from?
So it's believed to have come through South America.
Okay.
Yeah, and it's actually been one of the fastest documented weed spreads in California's history. So that it, you know, it has only been here for 30 years, and now it has made itself home to much of California.
That is incredible.
Yeah.
If you are suspicious that you have it on your property, what should you do?
Yeah, so definitely, you know, you could either take a picture or, you know, if you can grab a Ziploc bag and maybe a glove and take a sample, you can bring it by, of course, the local master gardener's office, mm-hmm. or the cooperative extension office, or even your county ag department. You could also take a picture and send it to any of those groups as well. Probably the best way to look for it, or the timing to look for it, is usually starting in the middle of summer. So this is considered a warm season annual, meaning these plants germinate usually in the late winter, early spring, and then they grow, they thrive during the warmer parts of the year. So during the summer months is when they're basically, you know, they're showiest.
Right,
and so
right.
So these are members, these are plants are members of the sunflower family. Mm-hmm. So they've got little tiny daisy-like flowers.
They're probably cute.
They're very cute little flowers, like you know, sunflowers are.
Right.
But they have windblown seeds. So like a
no.
dandelion, if you've ever, you know, picked a dandelion
no.
and blown the little,
yes.
Yeah, so it's same, that's how it spreads. And so it's,
oh.
you know, very prolific at spreading up and down the roadways. And that's where we're seeing it do
gosh.
Most of its damage. So, it's been mostly a roadside weed, and you know, mostly found in people's landscapes, you know, in and around, you know, areas where they may have mulch for
okay.
you know, rock pathways, or in and around some of their ornamentals. But now we're starting to see it make its way into annual rangelands where livestock graze.
Oh no!
And so it can actually cause harm to livestock as well. And
oh,
so
really?
That's yeah, that's where we're starting to see
oh, no.
more of a concern.
Do they
with
even
that.
Try to eat it? The livestock?
They'll
or?
If they have plenty of forage, they'll browse around it.
Okay.
But in you know, in areas where they may not have adequate feed, they will
okay.
eat it. Yeah. So.
And how do you like say, for instance, you have a regular garden, you notice that, or maybe suspicious, you have something like this in your garden? Can you pull it out as long as
yeah.
you're wearing gloves?
Yeah.
And
so it's it only persists by seed, and so it's an annual. So to basically break that life cycle, or to try to control the plant, probably the best control strategy is just to hand pull it.
Okay.
So just hand pull it early in the season before flowering.
Okay.
If it's starting to flower, then you know, hand pull it and maybe dispose of it in a plastic bag.
Okay.
Or if you've got a really good compost system, you could mulch, you know, you could compost those plants, and that would kill the seeds if the temperature got hot enough. But yeah, hand pulling is a great strategy.
Okay.
Yeah.
My gosh, I had no idea that it was, it sounds horrible.
Yeah, yeah. And it's like
so
I said, it's
wanna...
been really rapidly spreading throughout our area. And unfortunately, I think we're far from seeing any type of large control strategies
okay.
on it. So I think it's great for people to be aware of it and certainly be on the lookout
sure.
for it.
Now, I know the Master Gardeners here in Tuolumne County have provided quite a bit of information about yellow star thistle. Where are we in the fight against yellow star thistle?
Yeah.
I think a lot of people, there's so many pros and cons. Of course, beekeepers love them because of the yellow mm-hmm. flowers, and they make wonderful honey, but horses, I guess they can perish if they eat it mm-hmm. or eat enough of it. It's seems to be very invasive.
Yeah, yeah. So, you know, it's like I mentioned earlier in the show, it has been here for a long time, right? It was introduced
okay.
back in the 1850s.
Right.
And it now is estimated that it covers about 13 million acres across the state.
Okay.
So it's certainly has been very happy here in California.
It likes California.
It loves California. And where we're at in terms of the battle, so, you know, we've got a whole slew of tools in the toolbox for controlling yellow star thistle.
Okay.
But, you know, those tools are only as good as, you know, they're implemented, right?
Sure.
So, you know, there used to be a lot more resources that came through state funding to help try to combat weeds in general, and specifically yellow star thistle. But, you know, unfortunately, over time, many of those resources have dried up. And so now it's really, I mean, it's ultimately up to individual landowners to fight the battle.
Okay.
And so this is a great time. You know, often we get calls in July and August when it's, you know, in its full flower and it's, you know, extremely spiny and people are getting poked and, you know, it's making their hikes or their walks on various trails, you know, either impassable or uncomfortable because they're getting scratched
sure.
and all of that.
I know those thorns are deadly.
Oh, they're horrible. Yeah.
They really are.
They are
they're like spikes.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, it's
yeah. it really makes recreating in and around it really unenjoyable.
Sure.
Yeah. So, so this is the time, you know, I often tell people to call me back in January or February.
Oh, really?
This is the time to be either thinking about developing a game plan or implementing some type of a control strategy. So, you know, like the last weed we talked about, skeleton weed,
stinkwort,
thank you. It also, yellow star thistle only lives by seed, so it has to make new seed every year. So plants only live for a year.
Okay.
And so we need to break that seed cycle and basically prevent plants from making new seed. And so right now, all of that seed in the soil is germinating with those fall rains that we're getting. And, you know, we have lots and lots of little yellow star thistle seedlings out there right now.
Oh, gosh.
Yeah, they sound so cute.
They do sound cute.
But this is the time to nail them.
Oh,
so,
good.
Yeah, and so either, you know, you could go out and if you've got a patch that you know you have it, you could hand pull right now. You can actually hand pull pretty much all between now and until it flowers. So over the next 4 or 5 months is, you know, a great opportunity to do hand pulling. If you have a larger patch, hoeing works really well right now because they're tiny, tiny little seedlings.
So they don't have much of a root development.
Not this early
so
in the year.
You can
so
probably a little bit more easily get it out.
Yeah, you could get out there with a hoe and you can clear a pretty large area pretty quickly.
Okay.
And they're really, really small this time of the year. And if you have a much larger area and you want to consider maybe an herbicide, there is a very selective herbicide over the counter that many nurseries, that sell a material called yellow star thistle killer.
I've seen it.
Yeah, so it's a very selective herbicide that when used around this time of the year, January, February, March, it'll actually give you a whole season's worth of control. So it'll it'll just kill the yellow star thistle and, you know, some other closely related plants, but basically leave all your grasses. If it's intermixed typically in grasses, it'll leave all of those alone. So it makes for another good tool in the toolbox.
Sure. Well, those are great strategies.
Yeah.
And I didn't realize now is the time to be vigilant.
This is the time to at least start thinking of a game plan. Yeah.
And looking for everything. Is there any other weeds that we should probably be looking for to be aware of?
Another one that is starting to make its way into the foothills and get a strong establishment is a plant called skeleton weed. So it's another plant that is closely related to both yellow star thistle and stinkwort. It's in the sunflower family. Those sunflowers just love it in California.
They do.
Right, all that bright sunshine, they just love the cheeriness of California.
So
that one, hence its name, skeleton weed. It basically looks like basically a skeleton. It doesn't really have any leaves. It's just these little green stems and tiny yellow flowers. Mostly a problem on roadsides and disturbed areas, but is starting to find itself in people's landscapes as well. And this one is also a problem for many that have livestock, because it can also pose problems to many animals. So so it's also something that we're keeping our eye out for. So
So again, if you happen to have this plant, what should be the strategy?
So hand pulling again, if you see it, if you want confirmation again, you know, contact
sure.
the master gardeners, send a picture in, but if you have it, hand pulling is a really good strategy. Unlike the other ones that we talked about, this one is actually a perennial.
It's a perennial. So what does that mean?
So it means that rather than just living for a year and relying on seed production to persist, this actually can live for many years, like a shrub or a tree does. So it's got a very well-established root system. And even if you, just chop off the top of the plant, it's going to be able to re-sprout from the root. So this makes it a little bit more challenging for controlling it, just because it is a perennial. But again, hand pulling and getting that root mass up out of the ground is a really effective tool.
Oh, good. Yeah. So it doesn't have to be that complicated.
It doesn't, no.
Just get rid of it.
Just get rid of
just,
it.
just go right in there and get it.
Yes.
Now, I've got a weed in my backyard, and it's just an annoying little weed, and I'm wondering if with kind of the climate changing a little bit, it's getting a little bit warmer, it seems like I'm having a hard time just controlling it, and that is spotted spurge. Any research going on there?
Yeah, so of course another invasive plant that's non-native to California. Many of the spurges are all exotics, not from the United States, but I would say as it relates to, you know, maybe a changing climate, what I've been seeing is maybe the distribution in terms of where we once saw weeds is maybe shifting and changing, right? So, you know, where we thought weeds would sometimes, we wouldn't see them over an elevation of say 2,000 feet or 3,000 feet. Now we're starting to see those weeds, you know, push those boundaries and those limits.
You mean go to higher elevations?
Yeah, go to higher elevations. No. So that's one of the concerns that we have for many of these weeds is, you know, often we don't find them up in our national forests. Mm-hmm. And, you know, if we are having any sort of change in climate, whether it's, you know, more infrequent winter storm events, or maybe, you know, we are experiencing, you know, hotter, drier summers, or an increase in overall temperatures, that may give these weeds an even more competitive advantage at other elevations. So that's a huge concern.
So that means when we're looking at the map of where these weeds can live, the map is going to be even larger.
It could be.
It could be.
Yeah, it could be.
Not saying that it is,
yeah,
or will be,
but it's certainly something
it
that we need to be aware of and cognizant of, and making sure that, you know, for the most part, many of our forests, our national forests are, you know, to a certain extent, pretty pristine and weed-free. I mean, certainly there are weeds that make their way into the forest, and, you know, the forests and volunteers alike are trying to do a really good job of keeping those weeds out. But at the same time, with these weed shifts and changes, we have to, I think, be extra diligent about making sure that we're looking for them.
Okay, and going back to my own selfish question about spotted spurge.
Yeah.
I have been pulling it by hand.
Yeah.
And I have to be honest with you, I'm so tired of pulling it by hand.
Yeah.
Is there anything else I can do?
You know, I would see if there's any other underlying issues. So, you know, hand pulling works really well. One thing I've noticed about spotted spurge in particularly, so it grows flat on the ground, right?
I guess it could be a pretty plant. Now that I don't like it anymore.
Exactly. It's a plant that's in a place that you don't want it.
Right,
so that,
right,
by
exactly.
definition, makes it a weed, correct?
That's right.
So, you know, one of the things I would ask is there any underlying issues that's giving the spotted spurge encouraging it to grow there? So, you know, typically we see spotted spurge in areas that either have compacted soils or lots of bare ground. And
oh,
so,
you just nailed it.
Yeah. So
you just saw my backyard.
So making sure there's plenty of cover. So, you know, trying to maybe, you know, and often it's areas where, you know, this is often like brick patios or areas that you like to keep bare dirt for fire
mm-hmm.
protection.
Right.
Or maybe it might be areas that you try to keep down for animals so they have like an area to play
mm-hmm.
and run or whatever.
Right.
Even in you know, low mowed lawn or turf, we often see it as a problem. So,
okay.
you know, seeing if you can modify the environment to make it less prone for spotted spurge.
So it likes, I mean, just like how you were talking about some of these weeds love being in California.
Mm-hmm.
This weed loves my backyard because it has bare dirt
Correct.
And compacted soil.
Yes, yeah.
So if I change that,
mm-hmm.
then
you would make it less susceptible.
Okay.
Yeah. So,
okay.
Yeah. So if you can add mulch, add some shade somehow by interplanting some plants and add some heterogeneity to your landscape to be able to make some shade. So, you know, there are, you know, less direct sun. That's also
okay.
going to help. But really trying to make, you know, try to get some cover there and break up that compacted soil
right,
is going to
right.
really make a big difference.
I thank you so much for the advice.
Yeah.
And thank you so much for the show. For being on this show, I think we've just about run out of time. So I want to thank you so much. And can we talk about this in the future?
Definitely. Thanks
okay.
for having me.
Thank you, Scott. Goodbye.
Hello, everybody. This is Debbie Powell, the Master Gardener Coordinator for Calaveras and Tuolumne Counties, and I am at our office in San Andreas talking to Sue Mosbacher. Hello, Sue.
Hi, Debbie.
And it's always fun to chat with you. You're not only in charge of the Master Gardener Program, but you're in charge of the Master Food Preserver Program, and you have some wonderful stuff coming up, some wonderful opportunities. And what is it?
I do. We have a fabulous opportunity for people who like to teach others. Just as the Master Gardeners have their training so they can train people to teach others about home gardening, we teach people how to do food preservation so that we can teach classes. And we have a certification program that's coming up, and we're accepting applications now so people can apply. And then our training class includes information on basic high acid canning. We make jams and jellies. We talk about pickling. We do fermentation. We make homemade sauerkraut, kimchi, and kombucha. And we're working on cheeses too, making some homemade cheeses.
Mm-hmm. Oh my gosh.
Mozzarella cheese from scratch. Easy and delicious.
No.
Yeah.
Really? Yep. Mm-hmm. Is it easy?
It's very easy. Very easy.
To get mozzarella cheese.
Yep. Yep.
Oh
you just
my
need
gosh.
Three ingredients.
Three ingredients?
Yep.
Oh, I love it.
That tastes so good, yeah. So we'll be covering that, and then we'll also do pressure canning and some jerky and dehydrated foods, and then what everybody, you know, doesn't really think a whole lot about, but freezing and how you make sure that your food that goes into the freezer comes out with good texture and not too much freezer burn, and then teaching the basics of how you get this information out to our community.
Wow, that's wonderful. Now, some of our master gardeners are also master food preservers.
They are.
Which is so exciting because not only do they know how to grow the food that's in their garden, then they end up with this bountiful harvest. And mm-hmm. the saddest thing is to see it go to waste.
Yep, yep. And we want to make sure people realize all the different ways that they can preserve food. And some of it is as simple as taking all the abundance of tomatoes, washing them, drying them, putting them whole in the freezer, and you're good to go. And then you can can them, you can saute them, do whatever you want in the middle of winter when you want the taste of fresh tomatoes. And so
that's
there's lots of things.
That's amazing to me.
Yeah.
And mm-hmm. I have to admit, I finally started doing that because
you mentioned
that to me before, mm-hmm. and you said that cherry tomatoes were mm-hmm. just wonderful
yep.
and so easy. Just
yep.
stick them in the freezer on a
yep.
tray, and
mm-hmm.
and there you go, and you've got it preserved. You can add it to all kinds of stuff.
So I'm glad to see that something I taught you, you use. That's what we want to do.
And I believe it or not, I'm catching on.
Well, and it's exciting because we do classes in San Andreas and then also in Jackson because our program is amateur and Calaveras combined. And then we also have some people that work at farmers markets. We also go to Ag Day in Calaveras and Farm Day in Amador County.
And did we talk about the dates when?
No, we didn't. Thank you for asking.
that could be important.
Yes. So the training classes will actually start in March. They're going to be every other Friday starting on March 1st.
Okay.
And we're having them in the afternoons from 12 to 6:30. They'll be up in Jackson because we have space there and all of our equipment's there. So that way if somebody's working, they only have to take half day off twice a month or every other week.
Wonderful.
And so we have on our website, if you go to ucanr.edu/BE-MFP for BMFP. We have three training information sessions where we're going to explain what the program is, what the expectations are for volunteering. The application deadline is February 10th.
Okay.
And we're going to have a training information meeting in Angels Camp, in San Andreas, and in Burson.
Okay.
And so they're coming up on January 7th, February 1st, and February 4th. And so all the dates and the way to RSVP are on our website.
How about if they, for some reason, don't have a computer or have slow internet, mm-hmm. which can happen over here, is there a phone number they
sure.
can call?
They can call us at 530-621-5528. That's Robin's number. She's our fabulous admin up in the Placerville office.
She can reserve
a spot. Yeah.
Perfect.
Yeah.
Well, Sue, thank you so much. It sounds exciting.
And
it is. I'll talk to you soon.
Okay, thanks, Deb.
Bye-bye.
You've been listening to Over the Garden Gate, a program presented by the UCCE Master Gardeners of Tuolumne County. I'm Linda Reevely. Thank you for being with us. If you would like to contact us for more information, remember you can contact our hotline, which is area code 209-533-5912, or you can look us up on the kaad-lp.org website. Look for Over the Garden Gate. Thank you.